Okay, good morning everyone. Is that volume okay? Okay, great. Thank you for joining us this morning. It is early depending on where you're from. We're from California, so it's particularly early for us, although we've kind of gotten adjusted to the time. And we have a lot to cover this morning, there's four of us, so we have to go kind of quickly. So I apologize if I'm going to be speaking quickly, but we want to make sure there's time for questions at the end. So we're try to be disciplined and make sure there's time for everyone. So, again, I'm going to go fast, but trying to give you the information. So if you do want clarification, though, please raise your hand if I said something too fast or you think that something that didn't come out clearly because of what's going on with my voice right now, then let me know. Okay, so I'm going to start off with giving a little bit of context for the work that we're doing in the Learning Collaborative. And then I'll talk a little bit about the Learning Collaborative and then some of the learning that we had. This Learning Collaborative was designed to address a few things. One was the fragmentation. There's a lot of efforts happening for addressing fragmentation right now in California. There's work happening in integrating primary care, behavioral health, because it's trying to address the situation that services, especially for safety net populations, are not usually connected. People have to go to one provider, they have to do intakes with one provider, and then the services that they get in the intake process is not the same as another service in another area. So, again, an intake procedure has to happen and a new set of services, and a lot of things happen around that, particularly for high-risk safety net populations. It means that it's a barrier to access. It's very hard for people to access one service, and then if they have to go through another process to access another service, that means that very likely they're not going to get all the services that they need. We'll leave it at that. Then the other issue that coordination of care tries to address is that then the kinds of services that they get might be at odds with each other because the providers are not talking to each other, and then in some way that can impact, and that makes it hard for clients then to be adherent to what is what they're being asked to do for their care because they're getting conflicting messages from different providers if they can get into the different providers. Now, the efforts that have been happening to improve the situation, coordination and integration of services, primarily focus on clinical services. That means that they're not targeting social determinants of health per se, because it's focusing on how do you integrate a behavioral health clinical counseling service with a primary care medical treatment for, say, diabetes. And if you can improve the coordination of those services, that's happening at a clinical level, trying to bring people in a certain a common clinical team, for example, is one method, and other strategies. But it's too much to have those clinicians that are trying to learn how to work together to also be focusing on housing and also be focusing on transportation and be focusing on immigration status or other things that are pressing needs of the population. So the work has not yet really gone too far at finding out how to coordinate non-clinical services. And certainly you find that there's not as much of a focus, since these are clinical services, on population-level health. So clinical providers are not typically accustomed to working population-level health. And yet, these are the areas where the clients, the high-risk, high-need populations, a lot of times don't even come into clinical services. So those of you who might work with or know of community health centers and primary care centers will say that those centers are the best places for serving ethnic and racial populations because they're more likely to go there, especially for if they have mental health needs, than they are to go to a mental health provider agency. However, there are populations who don't even make it to primary care clinics. So if you look at data, you'll see that there is disparities in who accesses primary care or who accesses a health home. So although patient-centered medical homes do improve outcomes for racial and ethnic populations, there's still data that shows that there's a disparity about who gets into them, right? So if people are not getting into these services, a focus on population health, trying to address the needs of the community, might really benefit people who are not coming in for clinical services. But yet, all this focus on integration coordination is not addressing that too well, too much. So, but the thing is that people with people in our communities typically face multiple problems in multiple domains. They do not experience their health as compartmentalized as our services are. So, and then if an individual does have a co-occurring physical, mental, and substance abuse concern, they also typically have all the complex social needs. They might have unstable housing, or underemployment, limited healthcare services. They might have limited English proficiency, a combination of factors that could impact someone's ability to access services and have good health outcomes. Now, I skipped ahead a little bit and I added this piece about if you add racial and ethnic populations, if you look at racial and ethnic populations, you'll find that typically the social determinants of health, the negative social and environmental factors disproportionately affect those populations. And so there is a disproportionate negative impact in health status and disease burden that's been found in the literature for racial and ethnic communities. So if the social environmental factors are so important in terms of impacting the disease burden for these populations, it's even greater imperative to try to address these social determinants of health, to try to address these disparities, if that's your goal. And in California, we also see, and I'm sure in other places, you also see that issues of language access and culturally relevant services can become a big issue as well. So what we find, though, and this is the seed of a solution, what we were using for this learning collaborative, is that community-based organizations that meet the most pressing needs, the food, housing, employment, safety, those that address culturally and linguistically relevant services, so refugee services, language-based community centers, they are often the first place people go to help. They're the trusted organizations in the community. If you think in terms of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, people are going to much more tend to try to go and find a place where they can get help finding food or find housing than they are going to go and check their A1C levels for their diabetes care. So although the clinicians are integrating and coordinating care and trying to improve the care for these important health needs, the community is not seeing it as a priority because they have higher priorities. And they're not necessarily checking and monitoring their levels and doing things like that they need to for their whole health, right? But they are going to places that they can trust, that they feel that understands them, places that they feel that meets their basic needs. And the problem is that these organizations are not usually the ones that are being integrated in these new systems of integrated care or coordinated care, right? So the premise of the learning collaborative that we did in California was that if you want to reduce disparities for underserved, high-risk populations, you should try to create an integrated system of community-based care that addresses the whole person. Now, a lot of times people talk about whole person and they're talking about whole health or whole person, and they mean mental health, substance use, and physical health. And we used it to include social services. That whole health, we need to broaden that definition, not just physical health and behavioral health, but also the social, addressing the social needs of the community. We also believe that you should be including promotion, primary prevention, as well as treatment. If you just focus on treatment, you're not going to get all the broader community and address the needs of the broader community. So you have to be focusing on primary prevention, promotion, and addressing the social determinants through those approaches. So what did we do? Okay, good. I'm going okay in time. I can slow down maybe a little bit. So over a 12-month period, we had partnerships that we fostered in a learning collaborative of primary care, behavioral health, and community-based social service agencies. We had them come together to try to improve the health and wellness of underserved individuals with chronic health conditions, co-occurring conditions, through the development of an effective system of coordination of services and supports. So many of you might have heard of the terminology of a health neighborhood. So you have a health home, a patient-centered health home that's trying to take care of all the needs of an individual based on their needs, patient-centered health home. And then you can expand that, and some people had they talked about the medical neighborhood. The medical neighborhood was the specialty providers, the medical specialty providers, and then there's the concept of the health neighborhood, different than the medical neighborhood, which is not just the clinical specialty providers, but now other support services that are needed for well-being. What we were trying to, in this Learning Collaborative, provide a mechanism for making a health neighborhood function like a health home, trying to create a virtual health home, a way of bringing these members of a health neighborhood together to create a system of coordinated care and supports. We use the methodology from the Institute for Healthcare Improvement, which is the breakthrough series. We did a pilot version of this breakthrough series. It involves several different components. One is that groups of people come together who are trying to learn these new improvements to their system. It's a methodology for improving the services that are provided and the systems for providing those services through learning sessions where they learn about best practices and then practical periods between them called action periods where they are testing out on a small scale those changes in their agencies to learn from that testing what works for them. So we weren't just giving them these best practices and saying, here, you just do this and go out and do it, but we were asking them to try and find out what worked for them and modify as they were learning until they got the outcomes that they were looking for. So we thought this was the best methodology to really support their these agencies that were participating to really make a difference for their populations that they were serving. The other element of this learning collaborative that we did is we brought in the other underpinning, theoretical underpinnings, the model for improvement, and that really structures improvement efforts using continuous quality improvement methodology, asking the participants to really determine what it is that they're trying to accomplish, to create an aim, to think about how they will know that the changes that they're making is an improvement. Because to have improvements in services, you have to have change, but not all changes lead to improvement. So we didn't want them to just change, as so often happens, especially in trying to address the needs of underserved populations, where we invest limited resources to make a difference, and then we find that there's something that doesn't work about it. And so there's been this investment, and it doesn't lead to the results that we want. So they had to have a method of knowing that the changes they were doing were actually leading to an improvement, and then they needed to know what are the changes that they are to make the improvement. We had a panel of experts come together to provide a set of changes. This is called, we call it a change package in the language of the breakthrough series, and a set of changes to try to address the improvement of their systems. This is too much for you to read. Just suffice to say, we were trying to address different areas. One is the relationships that needed to happen between the different agencies. Social service providers are not used to having formal relationships with primary care providers and behavioral health providers. Everyone knows about the referral networks, right? You all have agencies that you can refer people to and hope that they get the services that they need. What we wanted to do is change that normal way of business as usual, the referral networks, and instead have people really have formal relationships for as if they were, although they're not the same, they're not all clinical, they still had to have formal referral and tracking of referrals, the same mechanisms, technology that is required in patient-centered medical homes that you're tracking your referrals. So we worked on that relationship piece. We worked on better understanding the client's needs, their whole health needs. That meant that every part of the partnership had to own the whole health of their clients that are coming in. That means social service agencies had to understand at a basic level, the primary care and behavioral health needs of their clients. These are things that these agencies were not doing before. They were not asking these questions. So we had to work on that, and then we had to work on the actual how do you coordinate services. So those were the areas that they were working on. We also wanted them to address primary prevention. And so the way we did that, again, most of these agencies were focused on providing direct services to the clients they serve, but we said use these relationships that you have, that you're fostering for integrated care, and now apply them to the spectrum of prevention. This comes from the Prevention Institute in Oakland, California. And they say that prevention functions at all these different levels. So these partnerships that you do for integrated and coordinated care, why don't you use it to think about if there's any policy that you need to influence? Why don't you use it to coordinate what kind of community education that you provide, or coordinate or create a broader coalition around a certain health issue that's affecting your community? So we introduced this concept so they thought that they realize they can act at a different level than just the clinical level. And we also use the concept from the Prevention Institute of two steps to prevention. And that is, you take a clinical encounter, and instead of just providing treatment, you think one step is to think about the behaviors and the environment that you need to adjust, right? And that's you know, what some people do. But two steps is to go and think about the behavior, what environmental factors you have to change in the community that impact the behaviors and exposures of the members of that community. So the way they did that is they said, well, okay, we have someone coming in who has a hip replacement that's needed, and we talk to them and we find out that, well, what happened is that they tripped in this park, and if they track that information, they might find that someone else comes in 3 months later and they also tripped in the park, and then someone else, and then they realize that there's a community problem that needs to be addressed, and then they can now act with their partners to try to maybe fix the park instead of just fixing all the hips that are coming, you know, that are coming into the park. So that's the idea of the two steps to prevention. So I have to stop. So I just want to say we had 10 agencies. One was a partnership with culturally focused navigators. These were navigator agencies, navigators that for Latino, Hmong, Cambodian, Vietnamese communities, and they developed these kind of relationships with primary care providers and behavioral health providers, and they were able to get their, instead of just navigating them to some agency and saying, we hope that you get connected, they had this formal relationship with the primary care, and they got the primary care that their community members needed. Meanwhile, the primary care agencies had the cultural expertise that they needed in the agencies that they were partnering with. Another one was focused on victims of violence, and from a social service side, from a peer support for victims of violence, and a behavioral health provider of victims of violence. So what we found was agencies providing the services in the distinct domains learn how to partner with each other, which is really important. That's not something that they were doing before when they just had referral networks. Share clients and information. That's a big challenge. How do you share information? They were able to create the releases of information and share information across partners that they didn't usually share information across, right? And coordinate care. Community-based service agencies and their staff all expanded their breadth. Everyone now started thinking whole health, physical, social, and behavioral. And that's something they weren't doing before. And that made a huge difference, which I can't tell you right now, but I can tell you later, on their clients. A huge difference on their clients. And then navigators, which we'll be hearing in a later presentation, Autumn will talk about that, which will be really interesting, what we learned about navigators being able to act more like care coordinators. So that's it. Thank you.